Thank you so much to our podcast sponsor, Huckleberry. Find them online at huckleberry.co.nz for organic produce, whole food groceries, top quality supplements, and sustainable home and personal care products delivered to your door. Welcome to another exciting episode of How to Save the World with myself, Tim Batt.
And Waveney Worth.
And we are celebrating the conclusion of Classic Free July. We have an incredible guest in who I'm very honoured and pleasured to introduce, Miriyama Kamo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, so nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Waveney.
How's it been? You're Plastic Free.
Plastic Free July, it's been easy because, of course, we're trying to be zero waste. So so Plastic Free is like, yay, I can do that. That's easy.
Not many people would say that.
Yeah, but we're nearly 8 months in. So we've been practicing for Plastic Free July without even thinking about it. And so when I got to it, I was like, oh, is there anything, you know, that we need to really be thinking about here? But no, it's all pretty well, like we'd figured out how to get our milk, you know, that sort of thing. I can't think of anything in plastic that, oh, you know, my husband loves to, once you get into that rabbit hole, it just goes deeper and deeper. So my husband is still a meat eater. And so, I don't think he's bought any meat in plastic during July, but that's certainly something that we're trying to address on the zero waste front.
Mm. How does he avoid that? Is it just that the butcher you can get it in the paper?
Yeah, so he's been getting it in paper. And we just say, just a small piece of paper is fine. And, you know, because they always want to wrap it up in seven different layers of this and that. And he's taken his own container. So when we've been organized, if he's gone shopping, leaving from the house, he'll take a container. But if he's out and about already, then it's the paper.
Can we zoom out for a second? Because I know a lot of people listening will have watched you on the telly for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And how recently have you been doing the waste reduction stuff with your whānau?
Yes, it's January 1. So January 1... at Birdlings Flat, so Waveney and I were talking about Birdlings Flat just before.
Great place.
Which is where, yeah, I did a lot of growing up there. And so I was there and I decided I was going to have a New Year's resolution. And I remember walking along the beach and thinking, I'm going to do zero waste, whatever that thing is that people talk about, zero waste, don't know what it is. I'm going to do it.
When did you decide? How much lead time did you give yourself?
Oh, a day or two.
I love you that you did that, because we were the opposite. We decided to do exactly the same thing. We thought, oh, we'll do it New Year's Day, January the 1st, but this was back in 2008. And we just couldn't get ourselves ready. So we ended up having to delay it by a month. So we started February the 1st.
No, don't feel bad. That's exactly what happened. So I realised very quickly, you can't just decide.
No, you can't.
You can't just go, I'm going to be zero waste and that's that, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a rude shock. I was like, oh.
And it's interesting that you say Plastic Free July has been easy now, because I think that was sort of my experience too, where it's that inertia of getting, or the hill of complexity, getting over it and getting started is a bigger deal than you might think.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, that doesn't sound very encouraging, does it?
No, but it's true.
But then once you're going, it's way easier than you think.
It is way easier than you think. It's so much easier than I thought it would be. I remember the first month I had a few down times where I was like, and actually I still have that now, where I still feel like we're still creating too much waste when I look at the rubbish bin.
As a household.
Yeah, yeah. I still get a bit down when I look at our rubbish bin. I think, what the heck, where's this coming from? You know, we're really mindful. How is it that we still have this much to put out? I mean, it's nowhere near what it was, of course, but so that first month though, I realized quickly you can't just make that decision and not be prepared. I spent that whole month, and actually I was only going to do it for a month. It was like, I actually called it the month of Jan. So it was only going to be, I was going to be zero waste for a month. And I was like, and at the end of it, then I'll just, you know, I'll probably have learned some nice habits. But I realized actually, the nice habits, I couldn't just rest on those. I had to keep going.
Relate to that.
Yeah, once you start, you realize, oh man.
We thought, because our challenge was for a year, and we thought we might be like these bubbles ready to burst, waiting to just run out and buy balloons or whatever.
Yes.
But it wasn't like that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I just found so much joy in it. Apart from the fact that you realise how much waste you create and all the great habits that you do learn and the kind of terrible shocks about the waste that you do create, I found a lot of joy in doing it, and I still do, and I can't imagine that that will stop. It feels really great to do this. Mm. Somebody said to me the other day, is it because you feel superior?
And what did you say?
I was like, maybe. I don't know. But no, it's not. It's actually once you really make a relationship with your life, and you have to if you're going to look at the way that you create waste, you suddenly create connections with people.
Yeah, because you've been blogging and obviously on TV, and that was something that I picked up on, that you had this an unexpected, deeper connection to people and stuff,
and just the earth. Yes. And you know, when you try to explain it to people, mostly people are really great about it. Some are like, "Ooh, you're so crazy," but you know, really wishy washy. I'm like, no, this has been really quite profound for me. You know, I love it. I'm not scared of bugs anymore or spiders. I'm not keen on them, but I'm not scared of them anymore. I don't want to see a mouse or a rat in my vicinity. I don't want to see them. But if I do, I'm not going to be, you know, flying onto the nearest table as I
once
would have.
Are you bringing this up in terms of composting? Like you're getting a bit more
Not even that. It's just generally, it's just a connection with the earth. It's just
that's
like,
so cool.
Yeah.
So it's sort of got you a bit more in tune to we're not the only living thing
here.
And maybe they have a right to be here too without getting poisoned
exactly.
and killed.
Why would I want to kill any of this beautiful life that the earth sustains?
How did being zero waste, like how has that connection been made?
Well, exactly that. So, first of all, I guess that first month we were out on Waiheke, and we have a sort of, we just live in yurts out there. And so, I mean, that probably points to us being a little bit green-minded anyway before we began the zero waste thing. But a lot of, you know, what I've said often is that a lot of the stuff that that I believed in, you know, recycling and all that kind of composting, all that, I didn't follow 100% all the time. So it wasn't until I got into the zero waste thing that actually those things didn't just become things that you do when you think about it. They became the norm all the time. And so that means that you have to get your hands dirty sometimes. Like you actually have to wash out your own rubbish bin and not have a bin liner anymore. And you have to deal with bugs because I also don't want to be spraying chemicals into the air and then having an empty tin can to deal with at the end of it. So then you appreciate life more. And
actually, one of the things I saw you blogging on was, or vlogging would have been this insight that you had the day you realised you didn't have to have mosquito repellent. Yes. You could just put a fan in your room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. Or just, like I mentioned before, the bin liner. You don't need bin liners. You know what? You can actually just empty out your bin and then wash the bin and your hands will get dirty. Oh no, I can wash my hands. You know, there's like
it's actually
so
I mean,
much shit you don't need to worry about.
Broadly probably better as well to get a bit of exposure to the dirt and the germs around you, build up the immune system.
Yeah.
True.
It's interesting. I've kind of got like a wee theory on that as well because I've gone vegan this year and I actually, similar to you, I intended to do it for like a month and just test it out and then see how it went, but I've just stayed in it because it's been fine, you know, it just becomes a new baseline. That's fine. I think by default, human beings actually do give a crap about the world around us, but we've sort of been taught through quite weird systems that are hidden from us, like farming. We don't see it. We don't see how the dairy farming happens and how we get our eggs and our chicken, that they're all cooped up and stuff. I think if we had more exposure to that, people actually would be a little more connected to the other living things around. And it's not until you sort of make that big step in whatever that is, going vegan or going waste reduction with your family, that you start to kind of open back up to that and see what's happening around the place.
Yeah. It's that thing of connection, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just connecting to.
But I think by default, people do care, but it's sort of like bred out of us.
Yeah. And I think we've sort of been happy to be led along that path because we don't have to worry about those things. Everything's convenient. And so that's a nice thing about doing it is that then you connect back to actually the way that things are done.
Do you feel like in your role as a journalist, because you were covering environmental stuff and climate catastrophe stories as well, do you think that fed into it as being a bit of a turning point?
I think, as a journalist, you follow the news and you're naturally educated about these sorts of things and interested and curious. So definitely, I'm sure all of that fed in. Yeah.
Because there's one story I wanted to ask you about, just in case people who listen to this podcast haven't heard about, because it's just quite an amazing story of how politics are failing around this. The Fox River story.
Yes.
Where this huge storm swept through in March of this year and ripped open a disused
landfill
and just strew 50 years worth of rubbish all over the place. Yeah. And then what happened next?
So then volunteer. Well, then there was a big debate about who was responsible for it, and the council got in and tried to sort it out. But the problem was huge, and then it was kind of like, well, it's going to cost us a heck of a lot of money. Who's responsible? Who should be paying for this? And then volunteers were getting in, and actually, it ended up that it was volunteers that did all the work. So once the story went to air, what was really brilliant about that was that first the army was sent in to do a big cleanup. And now DOC has taken over responsibility for it. So we should see a really we should see some really great resolution to that now.
But it took a bit of pressure, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was one of those examples where it was, because this stuff is going to keep happening. There's going to be these types of disasters.
Well, there's so many landfills around the country that could.
And we've typically put them in gullies near waterways and often landfills are near.
So I didn't know that about Miola Reef, for example. I didn't know that was until we did our story. Mm. And I was like, jeepers, that's
the dog
problem.
Walking park.
Yeah.
What is it? Is that a landfill?
The hood.
It
Yeah. So that's been covered over. And that is a potential, I don't want to say, it could be a catastrophe one day. With rising water levels and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it just seems like there's no plan at the ready for this sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, and that's why I think there's so much pressure now to announce climate emergencies. You know, our local bodies, quite a few of them have done it, Auckland most recently. And I saw that the government was discussing whether or not it should make it an emergency on a national scale as well. But there's a lot of pushback on that too. I'm not really sure about, I love the idea of announcing a climate emergency, but only if it's backed up with a plan and action. And I haven't seen any evidence of that. So
there's one city council, and it might be Dunedin, I think, that has demanded that the declaration of a climate emergency be tied into their plan, their city plan for the next 10 years.
But I think it would be quite a basic connection to make.
Well, yeah. I think if the local politicians can get away with going, it's a climate emergency, but don't make us do anything about it, because it's very expensive. It's the way they're looking at it.
It's
very costly. So there was a question that I wanted to ask specifically, because you are Māori and you've been a fantastic advocate for the culture and for te reo as well around the country. Do you think there's some lessons from like Māori tradition and tikanga that we can use in the green space?
Yeah, so we have a really strong values around manaakitanga and kaitiakitanga. And so, caring for, so if you're a kaitiaki, you're a guardian, you're caring for things, and manaakitanga is about, it's about caring for, taking care of someone or something. And I do. So there's a really strong zero waste movement in Māoridom called Parakore. And so that is about getting marae, where, you know, we sit down in big groups together and we eat together. And so we create a lot of waste together. And so Parakore has been this really potent, fantastic movement, which has shifted so many marae to a zero waste approach. And so that's been really effective. But also just those notions of, as I say, of kaitiakitanga, we're really connecting back to the earth and back to, I think it's quite useful if you come from a culture where you have deities for, you know, different parts of the environment, because you are mindful of the earth just by growing up that way. So, you know, you're mindful of the ngahere, of the forest, of the winds, of everything really that lives, and that you try to live with in harmony with, you know. And so I think in any Indigenous culture there are great kind of templates for how to live zero waste.
It seems to be more like across the entire world, Indigenous cultures have a far more holistic way of looking at
and it is live. That connectedness.
Yes,
you were talking about it before.
Yeah.
Even the idea of whakapapa,
yes,
is that connection, and we use it as people to connect with each other, but very much so around things as well.
Yeah,
and the idea that this thing just appears and we consume it and then it goes away if we can shift to a much more holistic point of view and look at this,
where it came from,
the fact that it's connected and it exists and it actually has all these relationships. It just didn't just appear. It probably was extracted from some particular part of the earth, and probably it's got a history and a story. And the more we're connected with that, the more we can understand what happened, you know, that complex past and that long future that our stuff has.
Absolutely.
And start making decisions that are more aligned with our values.
Hannah and Liam from The Rubbish Trip have this really great line where they say there's no magic delete button. When you put your stuff in the rubbish, that doesn't stop existing. It still goes on and has stories attached to it. It goes through other hands. And even when it's rotted in the landfill, it's creating more. You know, it's still having an impact.
That's right. It really doesn't go away. And then when, you know, when that storm rips through and the landfill's suddenly opened up and it's all over the beach, we're just looking at the images of that going, that stuff looks like it was just from yesterday.
Yeah, I know. It's terrifying.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah. And the plastic stuff particularly, of course. The other thing I was going to say about Māoridom is that we have a mahi ngā kai tradition too. So where we gather our food is really important. And we were talking about Birdlings Flat earlier, and the lake there is called Wairua, and that was a legendary food bowl in Canterbury. I mean, it still is. It's where there's an incredible number of different species of fish and birds and that sort of thing. And that lake has become poisoned. And the reason for that is that the hills surrounding it were stripped of the trees to build Christchurch, which meant that the silt just runs straight into the lake. And so we have in some parts of the lake about a metre and a half of this sludge at the bottom. So it makes it poisonous. So there was a rahuim, which meant that you can't take tuna or eel from there a couple of years ago. And it has to be pretty, like, it's a really big deal to put a rahui on a place. So for Māori, this notion of being able to safely collect food is really important, and to be able to do that directly with the land without, you know, you don't need to go to the shops to buy your car. You can actually collect it. I remember as a kid, my parents always had a bag in the back of the car. And we would screech to a halt all the time, wherever we're going, because they would see puha on the side of the road. And so the next thing you knew, Mum and Dad were out there, you know, making us go with them to collect the puha. And so, but now you have to be kind of careful about that. You cannot rely on the safety of it.
Could have been sprayed.
Sprayed, or it's just got, you know, effluent, and, you know, you just never know if the waterways are safe to collect from anymore. So that's a really big deal in Māoridom, is knowing that we can safely still mahi ngā kai, collect our kai.
So having that connection to the land is just a natural way to connect to these broader issues around sustainability.
Yeah.
Actually, and that's something a lot of people say, is that if we don't have that connection, like, say, if we just live in an urban environment and never actually get out of that, or very infrequently, that it's much harder to understand some of the issues.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like how zoos work, right? Like, you can go and visit these endangered species and actually see a rhinoceros and touch one and be like, oh my God, I have to care about this amazing creature, because you can see it. Because if you remove yourself from it, it's so much harder to connect with.
It is, like, we can all beat ourselves up and say, oh, you know, we're so disconnected, but we are disconnected. Yeah. And it's hard to know where your stuff from or it came from or feel connected to it, when
just
actually
to even care.
Yeah,
why would I care? I've got to go to work.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think it is a little bit by design, you know, because when things started getting particularly, I keep coming back to it, but the farming practices, when they started getting so full on that people wouldn't want to see how we're getting our meat and our dairy, you've got to kind of hide it from people. And especially in the States, they've got laws against, you know, when Peter have had to go in on these sort of guerrilla warfare style adventures with video cameras just to show how the... I mean, we had it in New Zealand with the pigs a few years ago. Didn't Mike King lead a group of people in with some video cameras and sort of storm a pig farm? So
we covered it on Sunday, actually.
Oh, there you go. See, we've got them.
Tell us what's the backstory.
How is your vegan journey going? How long have you been a vegan now?
I keep saying 3 months, but I feel like I've been saying that for longer.
I think you're clocking
so
it up.
So maybe 4 months.
Do you miss anything?
Like that. Look, the thing that I have done is when I'm overseas, like, I sort of hit the pause button because I get massive food FOMO. Am I going to miss it?
Okay, I understand.
So yeah. I've just been to the States and I had, I cannot tell a lie, a life-changingly good cheeseburger. Like, it was incredible. And I used to eat a lot of fast food. Like, I love fast food.
Yeah.
And it was just so good. But, you know, I think it's fine and probably important to have those sort of release valves every now and then. But I also, just for myself, I need a strong rule structure. Because if it's a bit flimsy, I just won't.
Maybe we can all relate to that, because all three of us here have challenged ourselves to do things. It's like, why? Like, for me, it was exactly that. I was, like, flopping about. Like, I knew that I wasn't aligning with my values and I wanted to do all this stuff that I just wasn't doing.
I had a somewhat heated discussion with a friend of mine who was staying over the weekend about home kill, and she was just like, I cannot see the argument of why you wouldn't eat home kill. And I was trying to explain the concept that, like, if I've made the rule that I have a vegan diet, I don't have to keep scrutinizing every decision.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, well, fair enough, taken care of. Like, I just don't need to think about it.
Yeah.
I can really relate to that. I would be exactly the same with the plastics. It's like, I don't have to engage with the biodegradable plastic. Is it a good one or a bad one? It's just like, avoid it.
I honestly don't want to live my life just, like, I don't want that to be what my energy and time is going into. So if I can just make a blanket rule that's on the whole pretty good, which is the sort of plant-based diet, and I know that that's taken care of quite a few things around eating.
Yes.
And I'll just do that. Yeah. And then I don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah, I don't see why you should have to argue about it either.
Well, you know how people get when you say you're vegan. You're trying to change everyone's mind. That's right.
I think the zero waste movement has a bit more, I don't know, what am I trying to say? I'm going to dig myself a hole. Vegans are often perceived as quite militant.
Mm.
And I think that, perhaps it's all because of you, Miniyama. Like,
what?
Zero waste is...
Why are we attacking our guest all of a sudden?
That came out wrong. I meant the zero waste is on a bit of... It's riding a bit of a wave at the moment. Right. And lots of people are into it. Positively, I meant. Yes,
yeah. That's nice to think that I've had some sort of influence. But of course, I've only been doing it for 8 months. And there have been people like you who have been doing it forever. And... it's amazing that people are starting to feel like they can be part of it. And that's really important to me. We were talking about Greta before. I talked to a couple of people about her and we don't want to scare people. You don't want to scare them so that they feel like there's no hope.
Mm.
And she is so important. I understand that too. She is so important. She is absolutely vital. Her voice is so important right now. But I think in knowing that we have lots of people who are able to take that position, it means that someone like me doesn't need to terrify
That's
everybody.
True. Mm.
So I feel like there's a really good balance here at the moment I feel like I'm kind of fortunate that I can talk about the joy of it and try and encourage people onto the waka with joy and hope.
But you recognize the place of those sort of activists who are going,
well, I do, and actually that's the reason I do, is because it's been so vital for Māoridom to have activists who are doing scary things that frighten people.
It's like spearheading, isn't it?
That's it.
They're having to push through something, and then they create that space for people to follow.
They create that space. And then the more moderate people can come in and start, picking up some of that kaupapa as well, which is probably where I fit on the zero waste stuff, where I'm lucky that we've got the Greta's out there that are able to really make a noise. And... And then she opens up the space where, for I don't want to scare everybody. I have a different approach.
And you've got children too, right?
So I've got kids as well. And so I need to know that my children can live in this world, this very quickly changing world, with some faith that they can make a difference.
And joy. I love that word. That with so much going on. And I think Greta herself said that, she was just hit emotionally incredibly hard. It led to depression for her. And if we can get to a point where our young people are living in homes where, say, mum, dad are, or whoever are zero waste or vegan or whatever those principles are that people have chosen to live by, and it's a joy-filled home.
That's it. Yeah. I think, you never know how long you're going to live anyway. So you should try and live it with joy for as long as you have it, have the gift of life. And so I don't want to live my life being terrified of climate change. I went through that where I was really quite, really concerned about it and got scared about what the future would be, especially being a mother. You know, what's the world going to be like for my children? And then I realized doing the zero waste thing really, as I say, connected me to this sort of sense of joy in the amazing world that we live in. You know, it's incredible.
Talk about a little bit more about that transition, because like I've got I'm in my early 30s and I've got a few friends that come to mind who have genuine, real like anxiety about this, and they're not really taking action.
Yeah,
I wonder how much those two things go together.
Well, there is a sort of paralysis that happens when you get very scared of something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We put our heads in the sand. We don't want to see it.
But what was that? I mean, I'm interested to hear about how, first of all, you got to be quite scared, and then how you got to sort of be a little bit empowered to do something.
It came over time, and so I remember being in Germany actually, and we've got some really great friends over there that we were staying with, and we went up to the snow, and all I could see was that a whole lot of it was melting, and it just made me think of, oh my God. And I remember thinking, you know, I missed so much of the joy of that trip because I was frightened about climate change. And so I don't know, I guess in the years, you know, as you sort of process any kind of fear, you come to some sort of understanding or landing on it, and hopefully it's something that means that you're able to take some action. So perhaps that's why I went to the zero waste thing. I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what the button was there, but
you sat with that for quite a while by the sounds of it. That anxiety around
I did probably. I mean, it would have been a good year of it actually, and I'm not frightened of it anymore at all. And probably, as I say, that one of the biggest things in moving through that was doing this practice, which I see it as a kind of a mindfulness exercise.
I was just about to ask, actually.
Isn't
that interesting?
I think that was the original story of how this podcast came to be. And what we're trying to do, Waveney and I, is that this was absolutely my journey. What you're describing is that for ages I was like reading stuff and seeing all the reports that would come out and just being overwhelmed with all the data and information that the earth was in a bad spot and it was going to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
And you do just get so emotionally overwhelmed with the information. And really, I think the only way to get yourself out of that is to just take some action. It doesn't have to be big.
Yeah.
But as soon as you start moving and doing something, that anxiety starts to lift a little bit.
I've got an analogy, an inappropriate analogy in my head of a digestive system.
Go on.
I wouldn't have to spell it out. If you just eat and eat, it's all that input. And then if nothing's coming out...
I love it. Yeah. Things are going to get stuck. It's not going to be good.
The sweet relief of doing something.
Thank you very much to our episode sponsor, Huckleberry.
At Huckleberry, your organic grocer, they believe in organics for everyone.
Just like Waveney does.
Woo, I do.
At Huckleberry, you'll find organic produce, an abundance of whole food groceries, and top quality supplements and sustainable home and personal care products.
Your one-stop shop for better food and living.
Head to your local Huckleberry or shop online at huckleberry.co.nz. It sounds like you can get pretty much everything there.
It's a universe.
It's a whole galaxy of good products at Huckleberry. Things for you to eat, things for you to put on your skin.
And things for you just to enjoy when you're sitting looking at the stars.
Just go to huckleberry.co.nz. That's huckleberry.co.nz.
Speaking of, without getting too blue, but I noticed that in your video series, the most sort of, you described it as your darkest day of your waste reduction journey was finding a concept called the family cloth this couple were using. With talking about that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I had a cold.
I found myself clenching up.
You don't know about this?
No, I do.
Oh, good. But you don't do it then, clearly. But no. So I had a cold and I blew my nose on tissue. And then so this is probably in the first couple of months of doing Zero Waste, where you're super focused on what you should be doing. And so I remember blowing my nose and thinking, wait,
what have I done?
Yeah, should I be using tissues? Is this allowed? I don't know. Am I meant to use a hanky? And then so I
know what Hannah and Liam would say.
Yeah, you're meant to use hankies. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And so I put a post out about it saying, am I meant to use hankies now? And someone replied, if you think that's bad, Google the family cloth.
Please, this would be the point where we explain for our listeners what the family cloth is.
So yeah, so I Googled it. And to my horror, I discovered that people don't use toilet paper. The real devotees don't use toilet paper. And they use anything. So they'll use rags or whatever. I don't know, whatever it is that they can find. They'll sew actual cloths for the toilet. Yeah. And then they use like a basket or something next to the toilet or a little bin or whatever. And they use the family cloth and then they pop it in the bin. And then
even the day, name.
They wash it. Yeah. And then they reuse them. Yeah.
The family cloth sounds, I think, worse than it is, though, because it sounds like you're all kind of using this single, this single cloth that everyone uses and then you wash it.
Also sounds like you're in a cult.
Yeah. Where is the family cloth? Did you wash the family cloth?
But realistically, like, my God, because as you pointed out in your video series, it's not just the product as well that we're flushing down the toilet, which has got dyes and chemicals to treat the paper. It's the paper itself, which isn't, you know, it breaks down, sure, but it's not nothing. The volume that we're dealing with of it, but then it's also the things like the carbon footprint of transporting.
That's it, yeah.
Those sorts of goods around.
And so, the real devotees, and perhaps you do this, Waveney, and I'm on the sort of on the waka, but I'm not there yet, which is that you don't see things as an end product that you're using. You have to consider, as you say, Tim, all the stuff that's come before to create that. And so that's why people who are really devoted to this cause use the family cloth, because they're like, I refuse to be a part of that.
Where are you with the family cloth? Oh, is this your line in the sand?
It's the line.
It's the line in the sand.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I use, this is hilarious.
You may lose a bit of influence if you start using the family cloth.
Maybe not everything needs to be.
But I mean, there's the bamboo toilet paper. So I use that. And then I saw this is one of the things that brings me joy, actually, seeing the innovation technology around what we're doing to address these issues. And one thing I saw recently was a guy down south who's making them out of stones. It made me think of Birdling's Flat. I was like, oh my God, all those stones. Imagine turning that into toilet paper.
How does that work?
I know, it's like amazing. So crush it up until it's a powder, basically. And then I think this is how it works. And then. I don't know.
And you turn it into some sort of paper
product. Somehow turns it into a paper product. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Incredible innovations coming out.
That's something I really like reading about as well. And I think that's, as you say, where you can get a lot of joy out of it. Because I'm a big nerd. I love technology. So, like, I love seeing these. I mean, we've just this month celebrated the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Yeah.
And it pains me that we've got, for example, Donald Trump is the leader of the free world for all intents and purposes, because I think there's such an opportunity to reframe the climate crisis as being this big, exciting thing that humans have a chance of all the countries getting together.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was competitive against the two superpowers, but like in the States, it just brought everyone together. Mm-hmm. Everyone became unified and aligned with this one mission. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is the kind of it's such a terrible thing that's happening, but what an opportunity for us to put our shit aside and just go, hey, there's something bigger than all of us that's going to wipe us out if we can't sort our comms and relations.
See, I'm not too worried about Donald Trump either. I just think, well, that luckily in America they have limited terms, and he's halfway through his and sometimes you need something to push against. But there's so much good happening, you know.
Sorry, that's where I was going with that.
Yeah.
There is this whole opportunity to reframe it as being an exciting space for new science and technology to come in. All of the things that are happening with carbon sequestration on a massive scale, we're like...
Carbon sequestration.
Yeah, so there's huge devices that are being created.
Oh, you mean that collect the carbon in the... Yeah, that's right.
Literally suck it out of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were just talking about trees.
Well, this is the big debate. There's this debate going on between basically your kind of Elon Musk class of people, your tech billionaires, your Bill Gates people who are investing millions and millions of dollars into these devices that act as big fans, sucking the carbon out of the atmosphere, and all of these kind of, I think, more sensibly minded environmentalists have been around for ages going, hey, you know what's really good at this? Trees. Which
yeah.
we already
There's
have.
There's a crap load of those. Yeah. yeah. Yeah, but it has to be the right trees. Now, who was telling me this the other day? You can't just plant a tree is not just a tree. Like, you want to have the right sort of trees to suck in as much carbon as possible. And the ideal always is that you plant trees that are native to the environment that you live in.
So you're doing more than one thing at a time.
Yeah, so yeah.
We're planting a bunch of pine, I think, at the moment with our is it a billion trees we're trying to plant in New Zealand?
Gosh, it's great having a journalist in the room. She just knows all of that. I'm going, oh, crap.
Well, I'd forgotten about the factories, of course, that are meant to suck the carbon in. Yeah, I mean,
it's a bit of a moonshot sort of a thing.
It is, yeah. I remember reading about one of the first bits of technology that was similar to that, but it was like 5 or 6 years ago, and there was lots of work done around it, but they were smaller units. They weren't actually the big factory size things, and they were showing a lot of promise, but it's money, you know, trying to get money. So yeah, that's why planting the trees makes sense.
Let's bring it back from this big global vision back to your waste reduction journey. Did you have one thing in particular, parking the family cloth aside, what were you surprised by how easy it was, and what were you surprised by that it was quite tricky to figure out?
Well, so much of it has been a process, like a journey, that I probably forgotten a lot of the stuff that was hard. But I remember I was terrified to take my own containers.
Were you?
Terrified.
To work, you mean, or to a shop?
To a shop.
Oh, actually, yeah. I can relate to that. Oh, we sat outside the butcher for the first time, my husband and I, and we played Paper, Scissors, Rock to see who would. It just was so weird. And even now, like, there's the majority of people are just going in there getting a plastic bag for their meat. And so, yeah, we sat there and I lost, and I remember having to go in, and actually I totally feel
it. I was so frightened. It was just ridiculous when I look back, because I literally now don't give a damn. I'll take my containers everywhere and present them everywhere, and I don't even think about whether they'll be accepted or not anymore.
You shift over forgotten. To the other side, yes, and forget yeah. that.
So if anyone was surprised, I'd probably be like, what, you don't take my container, huh? But why would not? Don't just do it.
Does that ever happen?
No, it happened once on Waiheke but
of
it turned out
places.
That the,
I'm shocked.
It was in the supermarket, but I remember the woman who was serving us, as it turned out, she had kind of clearly was having a bad day.
Okay.
And we did, I was able to use my container in the end. But
what happened in the interim?
Oh, poor thing. I don't know. There was something else going on. She just didn't want to use my container. She got really grumpy, and I was like, what, why are you grumpy? It's just my container. What? And then she was like, can't do it, and walked away. And then somebody else walked up really cheerily and said, oh, I can do that, it's no problem at all. And I was like,
you left there quivering going,
you're like, I don't get it.
That's so, yes,
it's only been once though. I've been really lucky. So but the very first time, so it was probably January 2 or 3, and I was like, oh, I'm doing the zero waste, oh shoot, I need to go to the mall, I have to take my own containers if I want to buy anything. And so I packed my little bag up and I went to the mall, and then I piked out because I was like, I don't want to present my containers. And also, this is so embarrassing, I took a keep cup, which I'd actually been using for a little while, sort of on and off. But then I was like, oh, I have to use this all the time. But I forgot to wash it before I took it in. So I was like, there's my keep cup, got my container, got this, got that. And I went in. And then I went to a tea place. And I was like, yes, I'll sample your tea. Just put it in my keep cup. And it had grotty old milk in it. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. She was like, it's all right, I'll clean it. So that was a very good, sharp lesson right there. So you went to the butcher, and did they treat you like you're a weirdo?
So much of it is in your head.
Yeah.
Like, they're never going to say it, are they? It might just be a look or a feeling, and then is that just in your head?
Yeah.
One of my things, actually, is the alertness that I have to have, that I still will drop the ball on, where the butcher, they'll use, and lots like delis, they use the plastic bag as a glove.
As a glove, yeah.
And so... often
you give them a container and they're oh, yeah, no problem. And then there's the tearing thing at a butcher or anywhere where they have to tear your container so that they get the weight of the container and make the scales to go on zero.
Oh, right.
And some of them can't do it.
Yeah.
And so I'm feeling stressed in anticipation to see if the tearing process will go okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching them to see if they're going to use that bag as a glove. And then if I, so I have to, I'm having to quickly sort of, as soon as they go for it, I'm like, oh, excuse me, could you just not use that plastic bag? And then, and this was so, 10 years ago, they hadn't come across it before. And I don't know what thought process there was around why I was bringing in a container, because clearly they thought it would be okay to use the bag and just throw it away afterwards if I didn't want that bag for some reason. And then I guess that they would end up going, well, now I don't have a method of getting this meat into... Sorry, Tom, this is a long extended segment about meat.
It's quite fine. I don't know if I mentioned about the life-changing cheeseburger. Oh, yeah, true.
That's right, let's reconnect it. So I would find that sometimes they would have to go out the back and find a pair of tongs that hadn't been used for quite some time.
God, you're a legend. How awesome. So you did that 10 years ago. I mean, I can't even imagine being like that. I mean, now it's just normal for me, but I'm in an environment where it's becoming normal.
And it's thanks to Waveney.
Yeah.
And the Gretas of the world.
That's right. Yeah. That's amazing.
Huh. Yeah. I don't know. It was, I don't know. There were things that were actually like your experience as well, very surprisingly positive. And the whole experience on balance was really positive. And what it was the connections, the same as what you were saying, connections to people, actually. Mm. That was the main thing. Like, and so by the end of the year, I was connected to that local butcher, whereas previously I'd only ever gone to the supermarket where, because I'm a pretty relational person, I'm always trying to recognise them and say hello. And I couldn't. There's just too many people at a supermarket, so I just didn't know them. Whereas at the butcher, by the end of the year, there was the butcher and we had a fishmonger and a local baker, all these people who I connected with. And of course, you've got your local markets, and that's what I really loved.
That's what I love. I've got a Sunday morning ritual where I go to the Grayland Market and I get all of our food for the week. So all of our fruit and veggies come from there. And yeah, you bump into people, you can chat to people.
It's my favourite thing, bumping into
people. It's so great, isn't it? It's a beautiful weekend ritual. I hate missing it.
Mm.
Yeah.
We like to, on this podcast, each episode have one single thing that is like the most impactful relative to how easy it was, action that people can take. Do you have anything through your waste reduction journey that you've taken this year?
Or more broadly, even.
Yeah, or more broadly. Just anything from your life that you think is kind of a cool, relatively simple action that people could be taking and putting into their lives.
It literally is taking your containers. That is the most easy thing. I mean, I have...
Do you think we sold it well? Like,
taking containers.
After sharing really candidly about how completely mortifying.
Well, remember, yours was 10 years ago.
Yes.
And mine was 8 months ago. And now there is a lot of discussion in the media about, you know, trying to reduce your waste. So people are more open to it now. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Are we all a little bit brainwashed by ourselves?
In the bubble. Do you think?
Yeah. Do people actually feel like they can take the containers? I hope they do, because actually it's really easy to do that.
This is the way I look at it. And this is why I kind of come down slightly differently on the we don't want to scare people thing. Because I'm like, you know what? I think it might be warranted at this point to scare people a little bit into action. So I get that it might be a little bit awkward, a little bit embarrassing, but we're running out of time.
And things are changing super fast. Like, people felt that way about bringing their own bags to the supermarket a year ago.
Yeah. And now we all just deal with it.
So respectfully, maybe just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, take your bloody containers. But honestly, it's really easy. I just have my backpack all the time. And I always have, you know, I've got this tea flask now because I love tea. And I always take a bottle because I will never buy a plastic bottle again. never, unless some, I don't know, God, it would just have to be the most extraordinary circumstances. I cannot imagine that I would ever, ever buy a plastic bottle again. Because I went out with the sea cleaners in Auckland Harbour.
Hayden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, oh my God, that was one of the most wonderful days ever. I couldn't recommend that more as a really great day out, weirdly, sloshing around in the mud and water, picking up crap. Oh, hello, dogs.
Sorry, here, our dogs freaking out in the backyard.
I love that. Hey, Dad, there's trouble. So, yeah, but it was weird. I thought it was going to be miserable. It was raining, you know, I'm going to go out in the wet and the cold and collect rubbish from and crap from the inlets. Actually, it was one of the most wonderful, fantastic things I've ever done.
What did you like about it?
Probably a sense of purpose, I think. But also just the community going out first thing in the morning. You're on a mission. So you've got a purpose and you're doing it with other people. And so you chat, you meet other people, you get to chat to them. It's fun. You're engaged in an activity. And you can see the impact of what you're doing because you clear everything up and then you get back on the boat and you leave. And as you look back, you can see that it's clear. Whereas when you're coming in, you can see there was tons and tons of rubbish. You can see the rubbish bags building up on the boat. So you can actually see the results of what you're doing. And
nice and tangible.
Yeah. Mm. And you're doing something. When you're doing something, as we were talking before, when you're taking action, it's really satisfying. So I loved it. So, and after that, though, because we picked up so many plastic bottles, I was like, okay, that's the end. I'm not having a plastic bottle again. That was before the zero waste thing. So I always have a bottle in my bag, and I always have my tea, and I always have a container, and I have a roll for my cutlery. It's people think that it's a pain, but it's much. That was just in my bag. It's easy.
That's awesome. Well, I think we've probably taken enough of your time, Mariama, but thank you so much for coming and talking to us. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and talk to you about these things.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure for me too, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah, great to expose everyone to the different ways of doing things.
Yeah, very cathartic for me, just get it all out there and talk about zero waste through and through. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plastic free, and it's great. Another zero waster.
And the top tip for this episode, once again, bring your own containers. It's fine. No one's judging you, especially now. It's 2019.
If they are, doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Screw them.
Exactly.
Thanks again.
Thanks heaps to Huckleberry, your organic grocer, who believe in organics for everyone. Head into your local Huckleberry to make the most of their weekly specials or shop online at huckleberry.co.nz.